College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on this Thursday morning, January 30th, and it's time to talk to Major Garrett, chief Washington correspondent for CBS News. His book is The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. And Major Garrett is with us this morning on KMOX. Major, we appreciate your time today. We know that it is a very sad day in Washington, D.C. after what happened last night. So we thank you for taking time out today.
Sure. It's a brutally sad day for the entire country. And as President Trump just indicated from the podium in the White House briefing room, other countries as well. Russian figure skaters of renown were aboard the American Airlines flight that collided with the Black Hawk helicopter, all perished. All the passengers on the plane, the three Army personnel in the Black Hawk helicopter, 67 dead, no survivors. This is now a recovery operation in the Potomac, which will take some time today and probably through the weekend. The highest priority is recovering the bodies so the families can grieve and come to some measure of closure, and then also to retrieve the wreckage and begin the process of investigating how this collision occurred and what the wreckage may or may not tell us. At the podium right now in the briefing room, President Trump, after offering conciliatory words for the whole country, calling us one nation, has begun to blame all of this, even though the investigation has only just begun, on diversity, equity, inclusion policies within the FAA. That's what he said. I'm only quoting the president. We'll await the actual investigation from the National Transportation Safety Board. But for better or for worse, a political argument is being made from the podium of the White House briefing room by the President of the United States long before the investigation has reached any firm conclusions about causes or errors.
Yeah, and Major, and as you mentioned right now, the focus should be on recovery efforts, consoling the families, and the investigation. And I guess, assuming that you have flown into that airport many times before, is there anything that you can paint a picture for listeners, maybe to understand exactly what air traffic controllers are dealing with at that airport, or what pilots might see or not see at that airport?
I landed on runway 33 at 12:48 yesterday afternoon, coming back from New York City. I fly into Reagan National quite a bit. It is a busy airport with not short runways, because that gives people a misimpression, but the runways are not as large as they are at Dulles International Airport, for example. It is a tight space. It is a very popular commercial aircraft destination. It has enlarged itself, added two terminals in the last 20 years because it is so central to downtown Washington, D.C. Lawmakers love to fly into Washington. Those who come here as visitors love to fly into that airport. If you go to Dulles, it's almost an hour to come into District of Columbia. If you go to BWI, Baltimore Washington International Airport, it's another hour. Reagan National is right in the heart of the city, just across the Potomac River. That's why it's so popular. It also is a congested airspace because of helicopters. Washington is probably among the cities in our country that has the highest density of regular helicopter traffic. You can go on X, formerly known as Twitter, and find an account called DC Helicopters that just tracks the different helicopters that are in the air constantly in Washington, D.C., because there's lots of military activity, there's lots of military training, and there's lots of eyes in the sky, because this is, since 9/11, a known, established, not vulnerable, but on-edge target. So there is an airspace congestion issue. Lawmakers have raised it in full public view. Both Virginia senators, Tim Kaine and Mark Warner, have. But Congress has made decisions about the number of slots, the availability of those slots, the frequency of landing at Washington National. We don't know what happened here. What we do know from very basic information is that neither aircraft, neither the helicopter nor the commercial jet, were on anything other than a normal flight path. So that raises some pretty significant questions. How can two aircraft, one a helicopter, a serious machine — the Black Hawk is among the most serious weapons, airborne weapons in the United States military — and a commercial jet be on normal flight patterns and collide over an airport as frequently used, as accessible, and with as much air traffic control visibility and accountability as Washington National? That is a mystery. Like I said, the President of the United States is implying it had something to do with hiring practices, that there was something wrong with a particular air traffic controllers on duty. We don't know anything about that yet. I'm just saying what he's saying, casting a very harsh and negative and judgmental political light on this. Whether the country is comfortable with that or not, I don't know. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I know that's what he's saying.
So what do you suppose then is going to be, what do you think the next week or weeks are going to be like, just based on how he's looking at this? Because he called them opinions today.
Yes.
He said,
yes,
we don't know what happened, but I have opinions.
And then he opinions.
And then he said what you said. So what do you think happens over the next several weeks now as a result of this?
I don't want to judge the reaction of the families. I've covered many tragedies in my journalistic career. It comes with the territory. I'm sad to say that. Tragedies are never easy to cover. I know from hard, sympathetic experience that what grief-stricken families need at a time like this is space and grace and a sense of respect for the shocking process they find themselves plunged into. Generally speaking, I have found those families and loved ones not needing, not seeking opinions. What they tend to seek is family solidarity, what answers they can bank on, and what remedies may arise. Typically, the presidents I've covered previous to this one have leaned in that direction. A fundamentally different direction is being taken today.
Major, shifting here from that tragedy to the hearings for the Health and Human Services Director, mm-hmm. The hearings for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the Senate hearings. What were your main takeaways from those hearings yesterday and the chances that RFK Jr. is confirmed?
So I can't give you a readout on the chances of Robert F. Kennedy's confirmation. There is a tremendous amount of skepticism about his previous statements. Not his skepticism, but his outright repetitive hostility about vaccines and their safety, even in the face of numerous studies and clinical realities showing the efficacy, the safety of particularly measles, mumps, rubella, MMR vaccines, and others. And he kept falling back on, I want things to be safe, I want better information, I need more transparency, or I call for it. As many senators in the question said, well, here are the studies, here is the science, here are the reservoirs of data about those who have taken the vaccines, or in the case of mifepristone, the so-called morning after drug therapy, studies about that. And his skepticism remained rigid. That could be a barrier to his confirmation. That was always going to be true. And how he comported himself and how he was going to reconcile himself to his past statements was going to be the great acid test of this confirmation process. I don't know how all the senators are going to process what they've heard. But what I do note is after the hearing – nobody was really willing to say if they were previously unknown that they were convinced. So I think there is still skepticism and some doubt about his confirmability.
Do you have any general read on any of these nominations left, like, you know, like RFK or Tulsi Gabbard or Kash Patel? If one of them is not going to make it, my guess is that they probably all will, but I don't know. If one of them is not going to, is there a read on who is going to have the toughest time?
So based on my conversations with those who are working with the Trump White House, doing the visits, the committee advocacy on behalf of the various nominees, it has always been my impression, based on their impressions of the conversations that they're privy to, and as the nominees have made their way around the Senate, that Tulsi Gabbard was in the most trouble. Not that she wasn't going to be confirmed, but that she would have the hardest time. And the very narrow vote for Pete Hegseth was revealing in that there was a full court press by the White House. There was a full court press by outside sort of quote-unquote echo chamber conservative influencers and media. And Pete Hegseth still needed the vice president to cast the deciding vote on his nomination, the narrowest Senate confirmation in our history for a defense secretary. That tells me that the doubts that those within the White House working on Tulsi Gabbard became a little bit more profound. So I would say of the two who are in the most jeopardy, I would say Tulsi Gabbard followed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Because there's an aggressive effort from the White House for Kash Patel, and there will be like political blowback for Republicans who do not support him, as there would be and will be for Pete Hegseth. Only the safest senators who believe, because of what their career trajectory is or what their own sense of political independence is, the three I'm mentioning are the ones who voted against Hegseth: Mitch McConnell, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. All the others know they are on notice, and if they buck the president on Kash Patel, there will be serious political blowback that will come upon them immediately. So I think Kash Patel probably falls into that same Pete Hegseth category, 51-50. I think it's a jump ball on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard.
Major, what does that mean when, you know, we keep hearing that, or we know that, right, the senators have to play their cards on which nominees they're going to vote against, and there will be political blowback. What does that look like?
So what it looks like is you get a lot of negative commentary on X or Instagram or TikTok or some other social media platform. You get blowback or criticism, or you're held up for ridicule on Newsmax, Right Side Broadcasting, other places in which those who are most Trump-oriented, who have dipped themselves or immersed themselves in alternate media, are most likely to hear that criticism, Fox as well. So that means you are more likely than not to encounter a primary opponent, and that primary opponent may more likely than not be endorsed by President Trump. Those kinds of things begin to accumulate rapidly and to a sitting senator's detriment. Not fatal in every instance, but worrisome. And at this stage of the Trump presidency, this early stage of the Trump presidency, most Senate Republicans do not want to incur that wrath and will only do so if they believe they can talk their way through it and explain that there's a larger rationale that is, if not as politically persuasive as all the criticism they know they're going to get, nearly so. So they can sort of fight it to a rough draw. And on RFK and Tulsi Gabbard, those circumstances might present themselves.
Major Garrett, usually at this time of our discussions on Thursday, we ask you to preview the takeout for us, but that's on hiatus. So is there anything else you want to tell us about?
breaking news?
No, not yet, but very soon. And I will just say this. This is a very tough day. This is the worst aviation disaster in our country since 2009. We haven't had a mass casualty aviation disaster since 2009. And before that, 2006, 2001, we have an astonishing safety record for aviation in our country. And it's not a talking point. It is not just a slogan to say air traffic safety in America is the best in the world. It is, because lots of people are involved and lots of people make that system work and be resilient and safe. Something terrible happened last night. It has gripped the nation. It will grip the nation for the next couple of days. And for anyone who can hear my voice, if you are inclined to prayer, please keep these families and everyone around them in your prayers.
Major Garrett, thank you.
Thank you.
We will talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks.